In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, Zoe has an interesting chat with Samson Williams, principal consultant at Axes and Eggs, a think tank and digital advisor on emerging technologies. Samson shares a bit about his work at Axes and Eggs and why his background in anthropology sparked his interest in smart communities. He also has a really interesting perspective on how the US is embracing smart concepts, and he shares a bit about the problem of food deserts and financial deserts and of 3G being a luxury. Zoe and Samson finish their conversation discussing the emerging trends of the millennial generation becoming policy and decision makers and the negative health impacts of technology making life more convenient. Now, you will hear in this episode that it was recorded before Zoe left on her Churchill Fellowship, and so she's talking in this episode about her trip as if it's into the future, but of course she's now on her final leg and most of the trip is in the past now. So you can hear Zoe's wrap-up of each stage of her trip on her special podcast. It's all about her Churchill Fellowship. It's available exclusively to people who support the Smart Community Podcast on Possible. Zoe's trip is still ongoing, nearly finished now, but you can hear about her visits to Orlando and Denver, which she mentions in this episode, among other places, by going to possible.com, searching for My Smart Community, and hitting support. So that's possible.com, P-O-Z-I-B-L-E.com. Search for My Smart Community and hit support to get access to this exclusive podcast. Now on with the episode. And as always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community. Smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Samson. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, Zoe. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Just the start of the day here. So I've got my coffee. So it's going to be a good day.
Ah, excellent. Excellent. It's like 5 o'clock here in Washington, D.C. So I appreciate you waking up early in Australia to chit chat with me.
Nah, no problem at all. Okay, let's jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you are passionate about?
Background. I love talking about myself. I'm originally from Texas, but I call Washington, D.C. home. So I work at Axes and Eggs, and Axes and Eggs is a think tank and digital advisor. And so we answer all the complicated questions that people have, particularly about emerging technology. So one of the things we just worked on is a Wi-Fi as a human right. So as your government transitions to everything digital, you can create at-risk and marginalized communities if they can't access your government services because they've gone digital. So Wi-Fi becomes a human right. And what I'm passionate about is that intersection of thought and culture and community, because when we talk about emerging technology, particularly hopefully as we talk later in smart cities, you can't actually have a smart city if you don't have Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi will connect all your IoT or Internet of Things devices, your autonomous vehicles, and it'll be the way that people buy, sell, and trade tokens, which is a blockchain-based technology that will be an essential part of the future of smart cities. So that's what I'm passionate about. I also play a lot of chess. So if you ever want to play chess, nice. Find me at chess.com.
Cool. What sparked your interest in this space?
By training, I'm an anthropologist. So I always like people and cultures, and civilization is cities. And so when we talk about how people will interact and build cities of the future, we look at historically from different civilizations, from the Romans to the Chinese to the different dynasties to the Mayans and the Aztecs, and how people came together to build their cities, because it's basically how do we want to collaborate to live in close proximity to each other. So that's always very interesting. So, and technology is just going to change the way we do it. As for instance, you and I are neighbors, because even though you're in Australia and I'm in Washington, D.C., we're having a chat.
What is a smart city or a smart community to you?
To me, I take a really practical approach to smart cities. Your smart cities can't have potholes, period. And so everyone's there like, oh, I'm in a smart city, this, bring in all this technology. I'm like, no. That's not a smart city. There's a lot of tech and bad infrastructure. So for me, smart cities start with, do you have smart roads, meaning do you not have potholes? Do you have public lighting? Are you leveraging your lamppost? Are your lighting also is Wi-Fi, so everything can be connected? And then is it walkable? Because a smart city in the future is not one where everyone parks their car. because you'll have driverless cars, hopefully, autonomous cars. And so a smart city is one that's connected, easily walkable, that's accessible to everyone, not just people who can't afford it, because your city's not that smart if it just creates new barriers to accessing basic government services, as well as quality of life.
Why do you think that this concept, the smart city or smart community concept, is so important?
So here in America, we're having issues with global warming. Global warming isn't a debate really outside of America. I'm sorry, let me ask, is global warming a debate in Australia?
Well, I think it's not as much as up for debate as it is in America.
So we're heavily debating whether or not global warming exists, even though right now here in DC, it's like -3. It just snowed yesterday. And then we're supposed to have like the 22°C temperatures tomorrow. Yeah. So the weather's going all like this. And so part of as we adjust as a species, as we've colonized the earth, our cities are going to be impacted by rising sea levels and other climate issues that arise due to climate change. If you've been watching the news in America, in Houston, Texas, where I'm originally from, we've had 3 500-year floods in back-to-back years. So in theory, a 500-year flood only happens once every 500 years. We had it in 2014, 15, and 16. Houston got flooded out. We used to have a fire season where in California, where we'd have brush fires and for a period of time. Now fire season is all year round in California. Most recently, a place called Paradise, California, got wiped off the earth. 20,000 homes got burnt down. Over 100,000 people got displaced. And so when we talk about smart cities, we really need to talk about or have in our minds, as humans have changed the climate and the climate is changing, how are we, as our population grows, going to contend and keep up with being able to provide sustainable housing, access to clean air, access to clean water? Because if you don't have access to clean air and clean water, everything else sort of just goes downhill.
I agree. How do you think that the U.S. is currently embracing this smart concept?
We embrace it like we do everything at the muzzle of a gun. We sort of pistol whipped it and said, we're going to have clean coal instead. And so that's how we embrace smart cities. That's how we embrace smart anything right now from a policy perspective. Withdrew from the Paris Accords and a bunch of other climate change issues that directly impact smart cities. We in America, we just haven't made it an investment in infrastructure. This goes back to your smart city can't have potholes because we have a place called Flint, Michigan. So the water's been contaminated by lead. And so from an infrastructure perspective, not saying a technology infrastructure perspective, but bridges, roads, plumbing, et cetera, the U.S. hasn't made that critical infrastructure investment in the last 65 years, 70 years, not since the end of World War II. And so we're suffering from a lack of leadership, and as well leadership, which gives us the budget to actually, rather, the will to acknowledge the problem than the budget to fix it. So that's where we're at. It's really unfortunate. So it is what it is. Fortunately, the other places I visit and frequent, Dubai and the Middle East, they're taking the smart cities. They're learning the lessons of the Industrial Revolution in the U.S. and China. And they're saying, we don't have to make the same mistakes. We can have legitimate smart cities. And so the rest of the world is advancing. And the U.S. will eventually catch up, hopefully, knock on wood, wherever there's some wood around here.
I think I've spoken to a few people from the U.S., and I think there's definitely pockets of innovation and smart stuff happening. But from a holistic approach, maybe the policy and the leadership and that kind of thing maybe stifles it. Like, because I plan to visit the U.S. in March this year. Or April, March this year. I'll be going to like Orlando, Denver, San Fran. And I know like Orlando particularly just doing so amazing things, but they've got really strong leadership that with a sustainability climate change focus, which has really helped them on this journey.
Yes. So at the micro scale, there are some cities. The easiest way for me to determine smart cities when not talking about potholes is, what is your ratio of food deserts? Food desert is places where people can't access fresh fruits and vegetables and just food. They don't have grocery stores. So if you take a map of a food desert, you also have a banking desert. So your people in your community can't access fresh fruit and vegetables, which means they're obese and fat. Americans are number one in the world for being obese and fat. I speak from personal experience. And so part of it is the food deserts. Then they have, on top of those food deserts, are the financial deserts, because no access to banking. So you have more marginalized people. And so it's a tough challenge at the micro scale within the U.S. And the easiest way is, for me, outside of potholes and food deserts, is my third favorite way is, do they have 3G? And 3G is a luxury, because you will have maybe two or three blocks that have 5G, but it's super limited. They're all in pilot programs, whereas the rest of the world, particularly in, we were just in Mauritius. Mm-hmm. And so Mauritius and America, from a Wi-Fi perspective, are neck and neck. Mauritius is going to leapfrog into 5G, and America will be busy being distracted on Twitter for a little bit before we get our act together.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're currently working on. I'm keen to hear about your company and the things that you do.
Cool. The biggest thing that Axes and Eggs is working on right now is we just rolled out a blockchain cryptocurrency and law program for the University of New Hampshire's School of Law. It's housed in their intellectual property division. So there's a nexus between blockchain and IP, an intellectual property, patents, copyrights, trademarks, that whole immutable ledger thing. And so we're helping navigate and develop the framework and educate future lawyers here in America on what is blockchain, how it intersects with the law, specifically IP law, so that it will become easier for enterprises, for governments, and for startups to understand and take advantage of this emerging technology, because we're very litigious here in the States. And so by educating the lawyers, they help us educate the policymakers and the policy advisors. So as we go at a national level to implement new emerging technology, as well as blockchain-based technology policies, we can do so hopefully faster and not have to rehash the lessons that we learned with the internet regarding data privacy and cybersecurity. So we're very excited about that. Then we're working with some private equity firms in emerging markets. Again, they have questions of what will be after blockchain. What is that new emerging market? And so in this instance, it's the short story is we're going back to the future and discussing cloud, because no emerging market works without the internet. And so when we talk about what the internet looks like and the cloud looks like, particularly in India, China, Indonesia, as well as Africa, we're talking first and foremost about infrastructure development. And from a digital perspective, that's all the cloud. The other thing we're going to do in the next 2 weeks, 30% of the federal government is shut down. So in here in the Washington, D.C. area, that's around 800,000 people, federal employees, who aren't getting paid. I think it's day 30, maybe it's day 31 of the federal shutdown. And so we're going to host a series of lectures on entrepreneurship for federal employees, because it's not just the 800,000 people right now who haven't gotten paid in the last 30 days. It's all the contractors who are also part of the federal system. So it has in the DC area, the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, it's the 800,000 federal employees plus all the contractors. So that brings up the number to around 2.5 to 2.7 million people who are impacted. And when they don't get paid, the local metropolitan statistical area suffers. So we're going to have a workshop on entrepreneurship and how they can start their own businesses, because unfortunately, the furlough, or the concept of the furlough, will become part of the American political scene. And we have to just help workers and federal employees prepare for periodically not getting a paycheck for a month or more at a time.
That sounds like a really interesting project, and hopefully really impactful as well.
Yep, hopefully so, because people, they've got to pay their mortgages and they've got to pay their car notes in for daycare, as well as food.
Okay, well, talk a little bit about government. How do you think that we can better integrate across the different disciplines, government and industries?
Better integrate, all integration starts with a conversation. We don't have the diplomats or the ambassadors as we used to have. that are just cross-functionally sharing ideas, lessons learned. Sometimes things go well, sometimes things go badly. We just need to have those frank and honest conversations. And also have the platforms and the meetings where not just the top level people can get together and rub elbows, but some of the people who are boots on the ground, who are implementing the policies from the top, can come together and say, this worked out really well, this didn't work out at all, don't do it. So right now we just don't have that. America is busy trying to build a physical wall. And in the meantime, we've built some metaphorical barriers between us and cross collaboration. So in general, I'm always a fan of how can we better collaborate, particularly leveraging the technology that we have here, which again, enables me to talk to you in Australia while I'm in Washington, DC. And so that's really what's needed to help build bridges and relationships across borders and oceans.
What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough in this space?
Self-driving cars are losing out to mopeds, scooters, razors. You guys have these in Australia?
Yeah, we have Lime.
Lime. That's the other one.
More and more coming now, it seems like the latest thing to hit the streets. Yeah.
It's interesting to see the number of individual or personalized modes of transportation, because on one hand it's like, wow, this, we're such a consumer society, we have so much excess, we can just leave these vehicles just laying around for anyone to use. Another interesting facet is no one saw this trend coming. No one said, hey, if you install bikes, people will ride around your city. They were like, no, you need to drive. And now they've gone from bikes to scooters to razors and mopeds, and unicycles are just one giant wheel. So I don't think we're really talking about that a lot, to see what particularly the millennial generation is going to be expecting as they become the decision makers. When I say the millennials, I mean folks like myself, 1980 to 95, who over the next 10 years are going to be policymakers. And so they're going to want to re-envision the world, and they don't want to be like their grandparents, right? And so they're going to say, hey, what's happening with that? So we're going to see a change in mobility and driving. What else is not as talked about? Cryptocurrencies are pretty much beat to death, so folks are looking into that. But what they're not realizing is one of the things that we're doing a research project on is called leapfrogging into obesity. And so part of that is whenever there's a digital transformation, you also get a waist size transformation, because the emerging economies, when you leapfrog with technology, the technology brings a level of sedentary lifestyle. We were just talking about these modes of transportation. And so with that new sedentary lifestyle and of Uber and Uber Eats in particular, people just get fatter. And so that has a unintended health cost, insurance cost. You have obesity being the main driver and all the 64 comorbidities of obesity. And the thing about obesity versus digital transformation, you can tell within 1 week whether or not you're getting obese. Whereas digital transformation may take years. Eat poorly for a week, boom, you like, yep, I'm now officially obese. So that's one of the things that people aren't talking about. What are the physical and health ramifications of technology making things more convenient, particularly food and processed foods? The thing I forgot to mention, and I'll do it very shortly, is data privacy. Data privacy is something we're not talking about often, because as we have all these connected devices, from your cell phone to autonomous vehicles to your Limes to your IoT devices, we are forfeiting our privacy for a level of surveillance and entering a surveillance state, because this goes back to how smart is your city? If it's collecting all the data on you as an individual, storing it and keeping it, and it opens up a Pandora's box for exploitation and abusive authoritarian exploitation. So I think we should actually be talking about how smart is your city if there's no privacy. So that's actually something we should spend more time talking about other than the health effects.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been awesome to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming onto the podcast. It's been great.
Likewise. Thank you very much. And I guess that's it.
I just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
Oh, people can connect with me on LinkedIn, Samson Williams. You can follow me on social at Hustle Fund Baby. It's like a trust fund baby, except I have to earn every penny. And you, of course, you can follow me, our company, at Axes and Eggs, like axes like you chop down trees, at taxes and eggs, and everybody eats eggs. They're delicious.
Yeah. Thanks again, Samson, for coming onto the podcast. And yeah, look forward to chatting again soon.
Awesome, Zoe.
Cheers. Thanks. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.